Hello. We're here today on this little podcast to talk about with our geography class and the making of arpilleras. And we are here today to talk about the disappearances and human rights violations in Chile and Argentina during both of their military dictatorships, around the 70s into the 80s and into the 90s. We'll be talking about the overview of sort of what was happening during this time, specifically what was happening to the people that the government was disappearing, and murdering, and what sort of was happening with those human rights violations, as well as how they're connected to our class and with arpilleras.
Hi, my name is Mia. I kind of focused a lot on the specifics of disappearances and specific personal accounts.
Hello, I am Jillian, and I am talking about forensic anthropology, the Patio 29 case, and the forensic teams of Chile and Argentina.
Hello, my name is Susan, and I'm going to be talking a little about the truth commissions that were established in Chile and Argentina after the dictatorships.
Hi, I'm Ellie, and I'm going to be talking about the people who disappeared and exactly what happened to them and the people who weren't identified as well.
So, first of all, what is forensic anthropology? Forensic anthropology is a subfield of what's called physical anthropology, and that means that we're forensic anthropologists. They take what are anthropological techniques and basically skeletal analysis to figure out how a person died, when they died, and who they are. Basically, you can match like dental records, you can look for diseases that the person might have had, illnesses, previous injuries. You know, if you have a childhood injury where you broke a leg, you will be able to see that regrow on a thing. If anyone has seen the TV show Bones, that's what they deal with. So in forensic anthropology, why is this really, really important for the cases of Chile and Argentina? And sort of one of the biggest things was that both dictatorships, their main goal was to eradicate anyone who was seen as a threat or a potential threat to the regime. And as a way to dispose and erase the person, the government often left the bodies of the victims in places where it would be very hard or to identify them. So there'd be places away from towns and cities, somewhere where the body would decompose quicker, and they would not be able to identify them based on facial features. And of course, they would probably be stripped of their clothing and any identifying markers like IDs, necklaces, jewelry, things like that. So when these bodies are being found decades later, forensic anthropologists have to come in and they use their training along with this information to match the missing person's case to hopefully the remains of a person. And the way that the dictatorships would do this to people is extremely dehumanizing. So, why would they even sort of do it in the first place? And to sort of answer that question, I am pulling a quote from a book called Necropolitics: Mass Graves and Exhumations in the Age of Human Rights, which was written by Francisco Fernandez, Antonius Robin, and Richard Ashby Wilson. The dead and disappeared symbolized for the authoritarian regimes, first of all, a victory over an enemy regarded as a threat to state sovereignty. The anonymous burial of the executed and disappeared entailed their physical, social, political, legal, and spiritual eradication. They were not acknowledged as fellow citizens, as legitimate members of the polity, or interlocutors about the community's future. They were therefore not entitled to a ritual that reincorporate them into society as deceased members. Evil deserved to be buried in anonymity, thus epitomizing the unhumanity of the dead. And sort of, yeah, which I thought that was such a powerful quote, and I don't have the words to summarize that, so I thought they have to hear that directly from these people. And what basically has happened is that the dictatorships did not know what human rights movements that would spark from them finding out about all these people, and sort of like how the discovery of these mass graves have led to calls for accountability. Another quote from the same book is, the emotional bond between parents and children proved stronger than military repression. And it just shows, like,
just really
the bond of family and community. So can you tell us a little bit about what happened to the people that disappeared?
Right. So obviously we don't know a whole lot, sadly, which is a whole other issue. But the things that we do know about a lot of these people that were never either found again or were found was that, this is absolutely insane, but many people were said to have been blown up using dynamite, their corpses, which obviously there's not much to go off of with those people. We don't know who it was that, you know, had that happened to, but we do have traces of people who were definitely blown up. And we also know that, like, a sports stadium was actually converted into a detention center where they took these people and were then tortured there and as well as executed too. So we know that people died there as well. There's also an estimated 180 people who were taken away by aircraft and dumped into the ocean. We have some of their names. We don't know if there's more or not, because again, we don't know who it could be that was sadly dumped into the ocean. But yeah, we do know more about people who were not identified over, like, you know, people where we don't even know how they died as well. We know this because morgues were filled with people. Just so many, like, loved ones ended up going there looking for their loved ones. And it was honestly hard to figure out who was who because of the amount of bullet wounds that, like, you know, was often, like, you know, in their face, and there was no IDs. So they honestly, a lot of these times, they didn't know who was who. So a lot of these people just had to go home still not knowing. Mm-hmm. And these people that were in the morgues were ended up being cremated. So it's not like we can tell now which person would, like, you know, belong to which family or whatever it was. But yeah, over 1,100 people were officially registered as disappeared. Obviously there's a lot more than that the government doesn't really want to, you know, say. But only 104 bodies were actually ever found after this that were, you know, either in the morgues or, you know, identified as well. But yeah, I don't know. Could you tell us more about Patio 29? I know that's kind of relevant to the situation.
Yes. So this is the Patio 29 case, and this was after the coup in Chile in 1973. Basically, for months, the regime sort of terrorized the community, and people were found dead on the streets, people were being taken, it was standstill fear. And a lot of these remains were collected and then buried with the mark NN for no name. Even if they knew the identity of the person, and this was often done without families knowing either. Yes. And there's no notice. So a lot of the people the undertakers or grave diggers at Patio 29, which is a graveyard, they remember seeing a lot of military vehicles come in with coffins and bodies and bury them. And this sort of lasted from September till December. And people had said that they would see trucks, like military trucks, so they're not just like a pickup truck, they're huge, arriving with bodies and coffins at least twice a day from September to December. Until this grave lot had been filled. And many believe that this spot was actually just like a mass grave. So after the regime was toppled in around 1991, there was a criminal complaint that was filed. And that led to one of the, they exhumed Patio 29 and they found 107 graves, but they contained 126 bodies. And between 1993 and 2002, the SML, which is Chile's Forensic Anthropology Team, which I'll be talking about later, identified 96 victims. And now you think, that's good, that's great, that's the end of that. It wasn't, because they had a lot of people that are like, we still think there's bodies there. There were other forensic anthropologists in other countries that were reviewing the research, and they're like, something isn't adding up. Glasgow University actually wrote 5 reports that challenged the SML's findings after they were given samples of the remains. And they said it, Glaslow said at least three identifications were wrong, but the SML dismissed them. And then in 2005, a new judge was assigned to the case, ordered this re-examination of around 80 remains, and the analysis was completed in the upcoming year. They had misidentified 48 remains.
Wow.
So that's 48 or more families that thought that this was their son, their daughter, their family member, and now suddenly it wasn't. And all these wounds and stuff had been reopened. One of the things I read said that they didn't even tell, their grandmother because they thought it was too horrible to tell her that that wasn't actually her grandson. And that, of course, created a huge, huge scandal and major distrust in the SML. And now Patio 29 is a protected national monument. But what I find really interesting about it is that there are, firsthand accounts of what was happening. Mia, could you talk a little about that?
So that actually reminded me of two specific, cases that I was kind of studying. The first was the disappeared prisoners of Caravan of Death in 1973. This was basically, the Caravan of Death was a military unit set across Chile weeks after the coup. It was under Pinochet's command, and it was basically a military unit that executed political prisoners without judicial process. Mm-hmm. So they reviewed prisoners already in custody and just basically executed them immediately without a trial. And a lot of the bodies were hidden in these secret graves kind of thing. And so during this specific, the Caravan of Death, there were 70 plus political prisoners who were killed, and that they had to put the bodies somewhere. And I mean,
they could have been.
It just reminds me of just all those mass deaths.
Yeah.
And what were they gonna do with it? And the Chilean judicial rulings, there was a quote I have that said that these acts were carried out as part of systematic policy of repression, just basically to freak everyone out, that we can do this if we want to. But it also reminds me of just the ways that they would hide these bodies. There's these things that I know you touched on a little bit, were the death flights.
Yeah.
So during Pinochet's regime, they had a lot of these things called death flights, where basically it was a method of disposing of the bodies that they had tortured or whatever they did with them that we kind of don't really know specifically. But basically, they would drug or sedate detainees. They would load them onto a military aircraft, take them pretty far out into the ocean, and just drop them off. And this kind of just ensured that the bodies wouldn't be recovered. I mean,
it's so sick that they were sedated. They weren't dead.
Yeah.
So you're leaving them to drown.
And I do remember seeing some things also of how the people would sometimes keep them awake. Mm-hmm. And so I know, and it's just thinking about their last moments, being freaking out, thinking you're about to get dumped into the ocean. It's just so freaky.
And there's not many ways to survive that either.
Right.
No.
And I think, I know, it's it might be kind of obvious, drop them off in the middle of the ocean, no one's going to find them. But it is just kind of sick how, strategic it was.
Right,
like,
yeah. It was very much on purpose.
Right.
Yes.
They knew what they were doing. They knew it was because,
someone knew what they were doing and were giving out orders.
Yeah, it was very much organized.
Precisely. And yeah, that's kind of what your topics were reminding me about, which we could start talking about maybe the Truth Commission.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, so these Truth Commissions, they played a big role after the dictatorships in Argentina and Chile. And basically what Truth Commission is that they're temporary government-established bodies that are created to investigate these human rights abuses after times of political violence. So in order to do this, these commissions collected testimonies from survivors, families, and witnesses, with just an overall goal of creating an official history record, identifying victims, and then also recommending reparations. And it wasn't just about having reparations for the actions of the military regime, but also just about recognition and making sure what happened was acknowledged publicly, which was definitely really important for these places where governments, these governments were denying or hiding that these human rights abuses. There's lots of secrecy around that. So specifically in Argentina, the Truth Commission was established after the Argentine Dirty War. And it was called the National Commission of the Disappearance of Persons, but it's also known as CONEDIP. So this commission was created in 1983 by President Raul Alfonsín, who was the first president of Argentina following this military dictatorship.
Yeah.
And during the dictatorship, the government had disappeared thousands of people, many of who were students, workers, and activists. And so CONEDIP produced this document titled Nunca Más, which documented 9,000 of these disappearances, although many people think that this is likely an undercount, which is just insane.
Yeah.
And it also identified over 300 secret detention centers where these people were being held and tortured.
That's awful.
Yeah. So this report kind of just became a really important foundational document for memory and justice, and just helped legitimize these victims' experiences, whose experiences were being downplayed and undermined. And then this report also directly led to reparation for some of these people, as it led to the trial of juntas, where some of these former military leaders were actually prosecuted for their crimes during this time, which was really significant. As it showed an attempt at real accountability,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't really happen after Chile's military dictatorship, which I'll get into in a second. So in Chile, their truth commission was known as the Reddit Commission, which was created after the Pinochet dictatorship by President Patricio Aylwin, who was, again, Chile's first president, democratically elected president after the dictatorship. And in this commission, they documented over 2,000 cases of people who were killed or disappeared, and, like Argentina, just created this official record of human rights violations. But, like I said previously, justice was more limited in Chile due to this 1978 self-amnesty law created by Pinochet when he was had rule over Chile,
mm-hmm.
and it was basically just this way where it was just designed this way where these military leaders would have immunity from prosecution for human rights violations committed between the military coup on September 11th, 1973 and March 10th, 1978, which is a pretty extensive period of time.
Yeah,
sure.
And that's when
happened.
a lot of the disappearances and killings
exactly.
were happening.
Yeah. So, yeah, it protected a lot of these people from prosecution. And so because of this, this commission just was kind of forced to focus more on recognition and reconciliation rather than actually legal accountability.
Which
is crazy.
That is crazy.
So yeah, these truth commissions played just a big role in remembrance memory. And I also know that forensic teams played a big role after the MCC.
Yes.
So
the forensic teams, as part of like, they sort of part work with these kind of truth commissions in a way of, because they are bringing identities to people that they know have been disappeared. The Argentine Forensic Anthropology Team is known as the EAAF. They're a non-governmental and not-for-profit organization, which I thought is very interesting, which was created in 1986 with the aim of developing techniques to help identify those killed during the dictatorship. What is really interesting, so they have, like, their work is divided into about, like, three stages. They have a preliminary phase, which means collecting accounts of the disappeared, looking at all that stuff. Then they have an analysis phase, which means looking at documents and records to find location of remains, and then an archaeological phase, which is finding the remains and using forensics techniques to sort of to identify the remains. And the EAAF is actually like worldwide recognized. They've worked
wow.
in 30 other countries. And they've worked also, including at the massacre in El Monte in El Salvador. And I also touched on Chile's forensic anthropology team in the Patio 29 case, which is Servicio Médico Legal. And they are actually work underneath the Ministry of Justice. They're a state agency that is responsible for identifying human remains. Many members of the SML were actually victims of the abuses in this dictatorship, those that were tortured and then later released, or family members. And in after the Patio 29 scandal, the SML did a huge sort of overhaul, and they actually sort of reconstructed their entire DNA database that they have in 2006 to make it more accurate. And then, of course, like today with the advances that we have in DNA technology that is also advanced. While this isn't also directly tied to the like the forensic teams, I thought this was also very interesting because it's the use of DNA. But during both Argentina and Chile, many, many young families were torn apart, and often either there were young children, toddlers, infants, stuff like that, they would be taken as well if the parents are being taken. And then prisoners who were taken often were kept alive if they were pregnant. Mm. They were kept alive until they had the baby and then killed. We know that in Argentina, at least 500 babies were taken from their parents, and then they were adopted into military families.
Oh my God.
So the military families were raising them. And like in the 80s, people started figuring out, like, wait, the adoption rates are actually a little suspicious.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't until like 2021 that large scale efforts were actually made to identify these children. Notable group, the Abuelas de Playa de Mayo, the grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo. They're a group of grandmothers who have spent decades trying to find and identify their missing grandchildren. And these women, of course, we've talked about, like the Madres. And they, alongside the, as part of the Madres, have marched, protested, talked to political and religious leaders, and protested even during the dictatorship, which often made them a target. In Chile, it was a little slightly different. Not only did you have the same thing happening, but you had many younger, lower class mothers who had their babies taken away from them. Often they were looking for, it was sort of seen as they're sort of coerced in thinking like, this will be better for your baby because then they won't have to grow up in poverty. Because at the time, Chile was going through a huge sort of economical crisis with what was going on with what Pinochet was doing. And so a lot of these poor communities, many indigenous, the mothers were either told that their baby had died, or they're just, you know, go in for a routine checkup with your newborn, like you do, and then your baby just never comes back.
Wow.
And many of these mothers were also single mothers too.
Oh my gosh.
And there's an, this might be, there's like an estimated like almost 20,000 children that were adopted out of Chile without parental consent during this time. And there was actually some laws that were put in place kind of secretly that made it a lot easier for babies to be adopted. Many went to like Scandinavian countries because a lot of the people that were adopting these babies thought the mothers and the parents had given up the baby willingly, and that they were helping because Chile was, of course, going through economic struggle. And it was also believed to used to enhance the Pinochet's like sort of global reputation, because like he had so many other things that were coming out about these human rights violations. So if he was saying like, oh, but look at all these like babies that are being adopted out of horrible situations.
Yeah,
and because there's like no paperwork on any of this, it makes it extremely difficult to find where these children are. So groups like the grandmothers, they and the Madres, with advancements in DNA testing, they're actually going and trying to like make this process easier. I know in Argentina, as of like about this year, I think 113 people have been reunited with their families.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's just like bringing back like memories and connection and healing from all these stuff. So talk about that.
I think just at least still in both Argentina and Chile, you still have these prominent political figures kind of just undermining what happened, which is why just like this idea of like memory and just like documentation that we've discussed is so important. Like for example, in Argentina, Javier Milei, who was elected president in 2023, who is still president, I believe.
Yeah.
He's been known to downplay just the scale of human rights abuses that were documented by the Truth Commission, which is just kind of insane.
Yeah,
and then
insane.
Similarly in Chile, this far-right political leader named José Antonio Kast has openly defended certain aspects of the Pinochet dictatorship, which is
insane.
Sort of arguing that the dictatorship brought stability and order. And then also, it's just been very critical of how human rights abuses are being remembered today. And it just kind of shows why documentation and memory matter so much, because just without these official records or maybe like memorial sites. Like I know Patio 29 has been turned into a mm-hmm. site memorium, and I know there's lots of museums that,
yeah,
like there's the Museum of Memory and Human Rights, which documents the violence of dictatorship, I think, of Chile. And it just shows why it matters so much today, because without it just becomes a lot easier for people to maybe deny or downplay what mm-hmm. happened. It just maybe leads in for history to kind of repeat itself.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, you guys, for hearing what we have to say about Chile and Venezuela and everything that happened to all mm-hmm. these people and how their families coped with it and how they're still trying to figure out where these people are, what happened to their family members, and all of that stuff. So we really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to hear us out. Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.